This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Religious faith can come in many shapes and sizes. For many folks, it's learned like a language or good manners, and teaching spiritual doctrine is no small task, especially if your views or ethnicity put you firmly in the minority. Our religion series continues today with a look at faith and education. We're not just talking about education in schools, but within families, religious communities, and the media. For more, we've got Darren Smith, author of Black and Mormon. He's also a professor at Westminster College in Salt Lake City, Utah. Plus Michael Battle, president of Interdenominational Theological Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and Robin Washington, editorial page editor with the Duluth News Tribune. He often does print and radio commentaries on being Black and Jewish. Welcome, folks.
Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
So, Darren, let me start with you. How did you discover your faith?
Actually, the missionaries, LDS missionaries, found me in Nashville when I was 15 years old. They knocked on my door, and sort of the rest is history from then on.
What compelled you about their message?
I was very taken by this idea of God continues to speak to people, and that the books, the Bible, is not closed, but yet remains open, and God very much is involved and governs the lives of individuals. And so I was very taken by that message. But my initial introduction into the faith at 15 was not, I would say, hardly doctrinal, theological. It was more social at that point. So I was looking for friends.
So given that, how did your family react? Were they practicing members of any faith? And if so, did they say, hey, what's going on? You guys, you can't step away from us.
Well, my grandmother, you know, was born Baptist. And she used to always say, you know, Baptist born, Baptist bred, when I die, Baptist buried. So she was pretty much, you know, hardcore committed to that particular faith community. So she was the only one that really offered any kind of opposition to, you know, to me in terms of my interest in the LDS Church. In fact, she actually told me, to be careful because, you know, those Mormons had some, you know, had some racist ideas about Black folks. She didn't know exactly what those ideas were, but she had heard that the Mormons were, a racist organization.
Well, I want to get back to that in a second, but want to move on to talk to our other folks. Now, Robin, your story is a bit different. Tell us about how you were raised and, you know, in terms of a faith community.
Right. I was raised always very Jewish, although not necessarily very religious. We celebrated holidays and everything, but we sort of kind of belonged to a synagogue. We lived in an ever-changing neighborhood. My family is interracial. My mother was Jewish and not Black. My father was Black and not Jewish, which I like to say makes me 100% of each, so 200%. So we always knew who we were. And the other driving religious part of our family, if you will, was the civil rights movement. This was in the late 50s, early 60s, and that was definitely a calling. But we were my parents worked very hard, took me years to realize this, to make sure that my brother and I knew we weren't the only ones. We would share Passover Seders with another Black Jewish family. So for us, it was no big deal to be Black and Jewish. Later, I realized maybe the rest of the world doesn't know that. By the way, just like Darren, I got my Baptist ancestors. Of course, my father was Baptist and an atheist. My grandfather was a Baptist minister, and he came from a whole line of Baptist ministers, and I think I was supposed to be one too.
Well, when you say that your father was Baptist and atheist, you're talking about, in that sense, a culture. The Baptist culture still remained, although, you know, theologically, I guess he was an atheist. Did he ever practice the Jewish religion then? Once
no,
he married?
No,
he didn't. He still was on his own theological level.
He definitely had his own ideas. organized religion wasn't part of it.
Well, let me turn to you, Michael. What was your walk of faith in terms of how you grew up?
I grew up in a family surrounded by ministers. I'm the fifth generation clergy in my family. So going into theological education was a natural thing for me, even though prior to my commitment to theological education, I had determined to make an investigative tour on my own to be sure that I was not in theological education only because of family tradition, but was in theological education because of a decision that I had made on my own. And then I discovered that we never really make decisions on our own, because no decisions are ever made in a vacuum. There are always contextual frameworks that shaped the decisions that we made. So I've been in the church all of my life, and as president of a theological seminary now, it's sort of at the end of that educating clergy process.
So we are talking about education in a broad sense, in a very traditional sense, as well as media, as well as family. I want to ask you, you're the only person here who's taught religion specifically. We've had other people who've taught. What makes that different, teaching in a formal context rather than teaching within your family or your congregation?
One of the primary things that one tries to do when teaching theological concepts and philosophical concepts in a formal context is that you are trying to help people learn how to think for themselves, how to be more critical in their investigation of textual material, and also in terms of doctrinal precepts. When a person is teaching family faith tradition, you tend to teach family faith tradition by trying to reassure people of the correctness of that tradition. But in a formal setting, you're trying to teach people to be very, very critical, to raise questions that you would not normally raise around the family table. For a number of years, I taught philosophy and religion at Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia, and I would always say to my students that it is not for me to tell you what to think. It is for me to tell you how to find the resources to shape your thinking and also to shape your analysis of what you have been told to teach by both your church and by your family context. And in theological education on the graduate level at ITC, we are consciously engaged in the process of helping people to raise critical questions about faith, in part because as a clergy person, it is the people in the congregation and the people around you who are raising critical questions. Those are the ones who probably have a greater investment in faith than those who are raising shallow questions.
Well, that brings us as a perfect transition to Darren, your story. You did raise questions in your book, Black and Mormon, and among other people who were members of the Latter-day Saints. Tell us what happened.
Well, I mean, I think much like your guest indicated, in my experience teaching, particularly at BYU and other institutions here in Utah, I mean,
that's Brigham Young, which is a Mormon affiliated university.
Thank you. And the institution, as you know, is fairly orthodox in the way that it goes about its daily business. And so race is not routinely discussed in many classes and many courses there, unfortunately. And so when Black and Mormon dropped, there was a lot of discussion about this book and some of the issues regarding African Americans, or at least people of African descent. And so I began to talk about this more openly in classes, not only on the campus of Brigham Young, but also at other institutions around here in Utah. And it raised a lot of eyebrows. Some of the more orthodox practitioners of the faith began to question my commitment to the faith.
Well, let's just be a little specific about the issues you were raising
before
you tell us more about the response. What questions were you asking?
Well, the questions about, often, at least in terms of Mormonism, there is this belief within Mormonism that blacks had descended from Cain. And I'm sure your guests could speak to this issue because this is something that's been as common in Christianity, Judaism, as well as Islam, this belief that blacks, the reason why we have black skin to some extent extended from God or curse that God put on black folks. And the Mormon faith continues to persist with this particular belief, regardless of the fact that there's been there was a formal announcement in 1978 that essentially enabled black men, that prior before 1978, black men could not participate or hold the priesthood, and that black women could not attend Mormonism's holiest places, which is the temples. But after 1978, Spencer W. Kimball essentially announced that this particular ban was no longer of much importance and that blacks could now equally participate. Well, when that happened, the theological racist folklore that underscored the ban to begin with was never really explained properly by church authorities. And so, unfortunately, many of the practicing Mormons, white Mormons in particular, still believe this, and this is still quite a common theme around this particular area when the question of blacks and why blacks couldn't participate in the faith comes up. So my purpose then was to sort of elucidate to my students the historical origins of this, and not just only within Mormonism, but also within the larger religious context of the way in which blacks have been marginalized, not only in other institutions, but also in Christianity, and to expand this discussion beyond the church. Well, of course, it led into me being disciplined, essentially.
And I have to move on to Robin. We don't have too much time, but in one sense, you and Darren are similar. You are using the media to bring up these issues of faith. You write a lot, do radio commentaries, Robin. What's your purpose? Is your purpose to reach people within Judaism who may not have thought about people who are black and Jewish, or to reach people who are African-American, or both?
Both. And it actually goes back to what Reverend Dr. Battle was saying about teaching people to think critically. You know, you say black Jew, and believe me, today, because we've been making a lot of noise about this, myself and others have been publicizing this for a few years, you don't just hear Sammy Davis Jr., so you know there's more out there. But more than that, there's issues of just shared religiosity. One quick one is the Million Man March. Remember, that was meant to be a Day of Atonement? Well, of course, Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement, and it was very easy for African-American Jews to resonate with that. That didn't come out of the blue, by the way. That was Minister Farrakhan had had conversations with Rabbi Capers Fune, a black rabbi in Chicago, about that very subject. So, I mean, there's shared religiosity as well as the kind of in-your-face surprise, I bet you didn't know. As far as the numbers go, by the way, there's the latest estimate by Gary Tobin, who's a demographer, suggests that one in five Jews in the United States is connected of color, which means a family, a member of color, is in there somewhere. And so, you know, if you say Jews and blacks or Jews and people of color, they're not mutually exclusive, and that starts a critical thinking process.
Well, I wish we had more time for this. There's so many issues to raise, but I'm afraid this is all we have. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Robin Washington is editorial page editor of the Duluth News Tribune. We've also been speaking with Michael Battle, who's president of Interdenominational Theological Center. He joined us from member station WABE in Atlanta, Georgia. And also Darren Smith. He's the author of Black and Mormon and a sociology professor at Westminster College in Salt Lake City, Utah. He joined us from member station KPCW in Salt Lake City.